Hey, Deserving listeners, a lot of you have been asking me to react to this apology video by Andrew Callahan, in which he has been, I think, accused of some sexual aggressive behavior. Let's get into it. My name is Dr. Kirk Honda. I'm a therapist and a professor. This is the Psychology in Seattle podcast and YouTube channel. Obviously, this video carries a trigger warning. If you have such triggers, talk to your therapist before watching this, of course. I thought I would actually watch another video that someone sent me as a background to this before I watch his response, so let's go to that.
In a far worse light. The internet's favorite vagabond is being accused of sexual coercion, manipulation, and assault by multiple women all across America.
Okay, so right off the bat, we're hearing that Andrew Callahan has been accused by multiple people of sexually assaulting them. When we hear that, usually that does mean that the individual has been indeed assaulting people. It's a well-known fact in our field that victims know that there are consequences to coming forward, so usually victims never come forward. The vast majority of sexual assault victims never report to anyone, maybe not even their friends and family, maybe not even their therapist. That can happen sometimes. So when people come forward, generally speaking, it is an indication that something happened. When you have multiple people coming forward, then almost always that indicates that a lot of things have happened. And often it's just the tip of the iceberg, because the people who have come forward are deciding to, and there are consequences for them to do so. Andrew Callahan, I'm guessing, has a group of followers that will bully these people coming forward, I'm guessing. I don't know. And of course, we live in a misogynistic society that will try to attack women in particular who come forward. So we're hearing that. Also, I have seen Andrew Callahan, I should say, a little bit on the internet or somewhere. He sort of had a amateur style of going around and interviewing people about various things. Actually, for those of you who don't know, let's watch one of his videos.
Yeah, he's a good friend, and this is a little bit more firm. And they're the best pillows I've ever had.
Which one do you prefer?
I prefer the softer one, the medium fill. The standard's a little tough on my neck.
Did you enjoy his pillows prior to his endorsement of Donald Trump?
Well, they've been around for a long time. I couldn't afford them. He cut the price.
So you can. These are the videos that I remember seeing where he will go to rallies or protests and will interview people and seemingly find some very interesting characters, people with interesting points of view, with problematic points of view, with racist, misogynistic points of view, and he will get them to talk and out themselves as who they are. And I think the purpose is to reveal to the public what some of these people are saying and what they believe, and also to have something to laugh at, because it's usually done in a comedic manner. And so this is the style. I don't know if this is all that Andrew Callahan did. When I went on HBO Max, I saw that there was a documentary that he just released rather recently, just a few weeks ago, I think, in which he goes around to different rallies and will interview people about gun rights and abortion and other kinds of things.
Let's take a look back at Andrew's history with being accused of sexual misconduct. The first time dates back to June 10th, 2020, when an Instagram user named Sophia posted on their story alleging they hung out with him and he was trying so hard to F my drunk friend, who made it clear she said no. And that Andrew is a manipulative ass mother effer who was using his platform to get girls to sleep with him. This user then posted a story from another alleged victim that said this: "Yeah, he went to school with me my freshman year, R-worded an underage girl in Seattle, and was a total creep to a bunch of other girls at my friend's high school in Seattle."
Wait, is he from Seattle? Yeah, it says he's 25 years old, born in Philadelphia, but grew up in Seattle, in the Capitol Hill neighborhood. Okay, so we're hearing about his behavior. It seems like it might, at least the allegations, extend into his childhood, into when he was a teenager.
"I hung out with him once my freshman year when I was still 17, and he aggressively came on to me, even after I told him now multiple times, then tried to kiss me and get me to go back to his place even after I told him I was uncomfortable. Then he tried following me and my roommate home in the dark. This user then claimed that 5 to 10 different women came forward claiming similar experiences with Andrew after he released his friend's story, 3 of which are allegedly underage. When confronted about the validity of the story, a Reddit user claiming to be file format stated this: 'The incident happened. I spoke with the victim after. Andrew knows what he did. Multiple women have came forward, some publicly, others are scared too, and for good reason. Look at how y'all are acting. Then a 17-year-old came forward.
Okay, so we're seeing what I thought and figured, which is what would happen, which often this is what happens, is when you have a famous person who is accused of doing these sorts of things, the fans will attack the accusers, will attack the victims. And so I think we just saw some evidence of that. And that's another reason why a lot of people don't come forward. A lot of victims do not come forward. The vast, vast majority of victims do not come forward. This is an established fact in our field. It's perhaps getting slightly better. And there's a bit of a myth that I think is developing that with Me Too and more perpetrators being outed and identified as such, that we have solved the problem. We have not solved the problem. I'm guessing that the vast majority of the people in power who have abused their power to harm people in this way have still yet to be outed. Plus, that doesn't account for all the people who are perpetrators who are not famous, right? There are still all sorts of systems in place that keep victims quiet or punish victims. There are criminal justice systems that don't react well to victims when they come forward that will protect perpetrators, particularly if they have privilege. So we have a long way to go.
Going into the bar and buying me shots, then pulled me around the corner and forcibly tried to make out with me until my roommate noticed and stopped him. Then he got her to go away again, and I kept telling him I had a boyfriend, and he said, "It's cool, I have a long-distance girlfriend, we are open. Do you want to have a threesome with us when she comes to town next week?"
So the allegations are pretty specific. They're not just saying he did something to me. I'm not showing you all the allegations, but the allegations have a lot of detail to it, which lend itself to credibility. We can't know for sure, obviously, but it lends itself to that. We are hearing a modus operandi, an MO, a pattern that the perpetrator will exhibit. They usually do. Perpetrators usually will follow the same pattern, the same set of behaviors. When we heard from the victims of Harvey Weinstein, we heard an extremely similar story over and over and over again. Bill Cosby had a very patterned MO. And we're hearing that, I think, about the allegations against Andrew Callahan. Essentially, what it sounds like he does is he will befriend women and he will be very persistent. They keep giving him the cold shoulder. They keep saying no. They keep saying, "Get away from me." And he just persists. He just keeps trying and he pressures them and then eventually assaults them.
And kept me in a little corner, pushing me about until my roommate's boyfriend came over and tried to fight his 22-year-old ass. Then we broke away and tried to walk home, just the two of us, and he followed us by himself halfway back to the dorms until...
That's another part of his MO, is that after the women, the young women or the teenage girls will say no and get away from him, he will stalk them, essentially, follow them back home. If this is true, then yikes. I mean, there's so many things about this, obviously, that are yikes, but that's a level of predation that is pretty high, right? To get no, 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 and all these signals that the person doesn't want to be with you, and you just persist and persist, and then after they run away from you in fear, you follow them like you're in a horror movie or something, like you're a horror movie villain, right? I don't know, but it's starting to sound like there might be some sadism in there, some sexual sadism, maybe some psychopathy, lack of empathy. I don't know, obviously, but it's sounding pretty... I didn't realize. I thought it was just one or two mild allegations, which still would be horrible, but this sounds on a level that is... Yikes.
I'm just gonna, in brief, say that I had hooked up with Andrew previously. He creeped me out, made me feel weird, was mean, demanding. He hit me up again after this time to hang out with me again, and I said, "No, I don't want to hang out with you anymore. I don't want to sleep with you ever again." Asked me why. I told him why he invited me to go out to dinner so he could apologize. I go to the dinner. He's not really talking to me, and then I'm like, "So, did you have something you wanted to say?" And he's like, "Oh, yeah. Do you want to have sex in your car after this?" And I was like, "No, I don't. Is there anything else you want to say?" And he was like, "Oh, yeah. Sorry if I made you feel uncomfortable. Are you joking? You really don't want to have sex in her car after.
So this lends itself to credibility as well, because not only is it a very similar story to the seemingly dozens of other stories from other people who didn't know each other in different towns. There are people in Seattle. Apparently he lived in New Orleans for a while, and there are similar stories there. Another town that he's lived in, maybe LA, I don't know. So if this story is true, there would be two main hypotheses. One is that he lacks the ability to understand what people are trying to tell him, which I don't think is true. He, in his videos, exhibits that he can think fast enough and well enough to be able to manage getting an HBO TV show. The other option is that he absolutely does know that he is putting women in very difficult situations that they don't like, that they feel predated upon, that they feel assaulted. So then you have to ask, well, why would he want to do that to someone? Well, there is a thing, I don't know about Andrew Callahan, but I have treated people with sadism or sexual sadism. It's a personality disorder. It's not included in the DSM anymore, but it absolutely is a personality disorder. It's part of the dark tetrad. For whatever reason, either genetically or experience-wise in their early life, they developed a personality in which they take a tremendous amount of pleasure by harming other people, by putting people through harm. This can be a sexual pleasure, or it can just be pleasure. Some of these individuals will prey on other people, but many of them will prey on people online because it's so much easier to make people uncomfortable or to harm others through the anonymity of the internet, right? But there are obviously a lot of people who will harm people in person as well. So there's a fair amount of people in the prison system who have this disorder and have been caught in their harm of other human beings, whether it's through violence, torture, or sexual sadism, sexual assault. So when I hear these stories, it sounds like, potentially, I can't know, obviously, without assessing him, but it sounds like someone who wakes up in the morning and lives a life just like anyone else, but in the way that you might like to have a good meal at the end of the day, or you might like to have consensual sex with your partner. For people who have these kinds of red flags, like Andrew Callahan does right now, these individuals also want to harm others sexually. They want to put people in situations where they feel uncomfortable, where they feel forced to do things that they don't want to do, where they might be actually being actively traumatized. This is an extremely rare personality disorder, by the way. I want to emphasize that. It is even rarer than psychopathy, or what the internet will call sociopaths, people with any social personality disorder. And listen to all my deep dives on that if you want to hear. There are some distinctions potentially based on certain clinical literature, but it's pretty rare that individuals will have this disorder, but they're out there. And they will often create a wake of destruction and trauma behind them as they abuse people.
I don't want to do that. Get out of my car.
Okay, so I won't show everything that this individual is saying because it was pretty graphic in terms of a sexual assault. But if you want to watch this, by the way, this YouTube channel is called The Buckingham Show. So you can watch the full, I recommend if you're interested, there's a lot of detail in here, a lot of good reporting seemingly. And so this individual is talking about a pretty graphic assault from Andrew Callahan. It's not just pressuring, it's an account of a physical assault against an individual. Truly awful, awful.
Quickly and erratically down the road, I pulled into a busier street and I stopped abruptly thinking, you know, like, maybe someone will realize something is wrong, or if someone is honking at me, like, he'll feel uncomfortable and want to leave the car. But I guess it did make him uncomfortable that I did that, and I told him to get the fuck out of my car, and he was like, can I at least get a kiss goodbye?
All right, I never thought I'd make a video like this, but I think there's an important conversation to be had, and I just want to be fully accountable, honest, and transparent with all of you guys. So I'd like to start by thanking every single person who's came out in the past week to speak about different ways in which my behavior has made them feel uncomfortable or pressured during a sexual situation, and to people who said that I've made unwanted advances and had a hard time with rejection. I'm sure this was not easy to do. It's never easy to speak out. And
I will say that his style of responding is better seeming than other people in this situation. At least he's saying something a lot of times people don't. And he is not blaming the victims. He's not saying they didn't happen. Maybe he will. But the beginning is promising. However, the way in which he describes what he did, he says, let's rewind it and hear the wording, but he's saying, I was pressuring and I was having a hard time with rejection. With the way that the stories sounded, and there were multiple people who had very similar stories, and we just have to imagine there are so many others who have not come forward because of the consequences for doing so are so great. The allegations describe him as wanting people to be uncomfortable by pressuring people who obviously and repeatedly indicate that they are not into it. That is not someone who is not understanding what's happening or who is having a hard time with rejection. If anything, he seemed to crave rejection. I don't know that, obviously, but the allegations are in line with perpetrators who actually want rejection. They don't want people to say yes. They only want people to say no because that's what they get pleasure from. They get pleasure from people saying no and them overpowering them. Think of Bill Cosby, the allegations against him. At the height of his powers for many, many years, he could have had sex with all sorts of people, and maybe he did. And yet he still would drug people, allegedly, and assault them while they were asleep. There's no functional reason why you would do that unless you get pleasure from doing that. It's not a means to an end. It is the end to pressure someone. So the way that he is described to have behaved, it doesn't sound like someone who is the way that he's summarizing this rule.
Every single person who's came out in the past week to speak about different ways in which my behavior has made them feel uncomfortable or pressured during a sexual situation, and to people who
uncomfortable or pressured in a sexual situation. I mean, I guess that is true. It's not a lie, but it's a minimization, I would say. I don't. Maybe he'll get into it.
Who said that I've made unwanted advances and had a hard time with rejection.
A hard time with rejection. It didn't sound like that to me. It sounded like that was the whole point, was that he wanted to put people in situations where they would reject him, and then that's when the pressure and the assault would become even more severe. These are allegations, of course. I can't know if they're true, but they sound credible.
I'm sure this was not easy to do. It's never easy to speak out, and it was hard for me to hear as well, because to be honest with you, up until this point, I didn't even really realize that I had this pattern that had affected multiple people.
Again, it's good that he's saying that he appreciates people coming forward, but then he says, I didn't even know I had this pattern. That's hard to believe. If any of the accounts are accurate or credible or truthful, it'd be hard to believe that a perpetrator who does that sort of thing would not know that they are pressuring people. The stories aren't just he pressured someone, they kind of gave him the cold shoulder, and then he kept persisting. That's not what we heard. What we heard were people saying, no, I don't want to, and him continuing to do it, and on multiple occasions with the same people, right? And then forcing himself physically on other people after they've indicated no, 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 no. It doesn't sound like someone who wouldn't know what they're doing.
It's by my closest collaborators, and my name was printed in 40 different news outlets next to the words sexual misconduct, and I just kind of spiraled into a mental health crisis.
That's not the word misconduct. That's too light. This is, I don't know what's going to get me canceled, what's going to get me taken off of YouTube, but the R word is definitely a descriptor of the allegations. Sexual assault, sexual predation, sexual crimes have been occurred, allegedly. It's not just misconduct. Misconduct sounds like you told a bad joke at a work party or something. That's not what we heard from the alleged victims.
I'm okay now, but I don't really think this is about me. This is about the people that I've affected. So I just want to express my complete sympathy, respect, and support for anyone who I've done wrong by. And I really want to do better and be fully accountable for everything.
All right. So in my deep dive on apologies, I developed a system of analyzing apologies and how to differentiate between a non-apology and an apology. And often these public figures will provide what I would call a type of non-apology, which is to say you're sorry. You know, they'll say, I'm sorry. I take full accountability. I apologize. They'll say those words. I feel bad for those individuals. They will say those phrases. He, I think, has a lot of money and can pay for consultants to help him with this. And I think he has a lot of internet savvy, at least he has demonstrated. I think, from my understanding, he just started his own YouTube channel and worked his way up in notoriety, where he had his own HBO documentary that's centered on him. So you have to have a lot of internet savvy to get to that point, right? So there's a possibility, I can't know, that he has calculated that if he says the right things, that he can get his career back on track. The proof is in the pudding. So if he actually cares about these individuals and is actually sorry, then he will highlight their story. He will say, they said this about me, and that is horrific what I did. What I did is potentially criminal. What I did was absolutely victimizing, and there's no excuse, and something's wrong with me. Would be the thing. So that would be an apology. And a non-apology is to say you're sorry, but not really identify the transgression and not really care about the effect that you've had on other people. So I don't know, maybe after this video is only a few minutes longer. So maybe subsequently after this, he has actually done things that have demonstrated a true apology, but it's not sounding promising at this point. If he came out of the gate and said, I have a problem. I have committed some serious assaults on other people of varying degrees, and I have a problem, and I'm so sorry for what you will hear people say this often when they're being convicted, when they're in court, and they're being faced with statements from the victims. This doesn't always happen, obviously, but it can. Perpetrators can sincerely turn to the victims in court or otherwise and legit seemingly apologize, you know, can authentically apologize for their effect on other people. It happens. So I've seen that before. You might have seen those things before. And this doesn't look like it yet. Maybe it will. Let's watch. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a new year, so of course it's time for New Year's resolutions. But often, those are just manifestations of internalized harmful voices, voices that tell us we're not good enough. So instead of making a resolution to change something, let's recognize that we are already good enough. Now, most people think of therapy as a place for us to work on our problems, but there are several schools of thought within the field of psychotherapy that adamantly reject that paradigm, like narrative therapy and solution-focused. Instead, these clinicians help us focus on what we're already doing well. And by helping us do that, data shows that we often will gravitate towards more beneficial patterns. Well, one place you can find such therapists is on BetterHelp. If you're thinking of starting therapy, it's definitely worth giving a try. So, celebrate the progress you've already made. Visit betterhelp.com/Kirk today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp, HELP.com/Kirk.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Everything that I've done. So that being said, I want to make a few things clear. I've always taken no for an answer. As far as consent, I've never...
Again, these are allegations. Innocent until proven guilty. But It's hard to believe, given the multiple accounts from multiple victims in multiple cities over multiple years, going back to high school. I mean, he's 25, so it wasn't that long ago for him. But, you know, 8 years, 9 years, maybe longer. Seemingly dozens of people who have come forward with their face and name and have identified themselves and given very detailed accounts that are very specific and oddly familiar across victims that sound extremely credible. Could they all be lying? Sure, they could be. Absolutely. I can't know that. But if I were to put my money down on something, I would say that all of the victims and their stories are true. If that's true, then yikes. He just says that he's always taken no for an answer. Yeah. That's not what the victims are saying.
Complete sympathy, respect, and support for anyone who I've done wrong by. And I really want to do better and be fully accountable for everything that I've done. So that being said, I want to make a few things clear. I've always taken no for an answer. As far as consent, I've never overstepped that line. But, you know, I think I want to have a more nuanced and important conversation about power dynamics, pressure, and coercion.
You know, maybe this is authentic. Maybe it's real. Maybe he is emerging into awareness. He has a long way to go, but maybe he will get there eventually. But I don't know. But he's invoking phrases. Given his internet savvy, I assume that he has thought a lot about his response. And this is much more calculated than it is coming across. It comes across as quite off the cuff and genuine, and maybe it is. But who knows? Anyway, it's a possibility that he has observed how other people in his position have been accused of these sorts of things, have incurred a bit of cancellation, but have emerged relatively unscathed, like Louis C.K., for example. He was accused of abusing his power of his position and forced women into situations that they were extremely uncomfortable with. And he was outed for that. And he seemingly took responsibility and apologized. I don't know that. Don't quote me on that. And then over time, he, I think, managed to get his career kind of back in order. Not the way it was before, but he, I think, is still working and still respected by many. So I don't know, but Andrew Callahan right now is using phrases along those lines. Like, I have a lot to learn about the nuances of power, because that is a much more palatable story to the public. I would imagine that for someone who has power, you know, like you are a boss and you have 5 employees and you ask, you have a crush on one of your employees and you ask one of them to go on a date or something and they feel pressured because you're the boss and they go on a date with you, but they didn't really want to go on a date with you. And then you try to kiss them goodnight and they give in and you know, the victim kisses goodnight. And then the next day they tweet or they call HR or something. And there's allegations of an inappropriate, abusive relationship that predates on someone that is a subordinate. That story on the cancellation scale, if you will, is not as high as what we are hearing from the victims. The victims are talking about things that are far, far beyond that scenario. But he's using language that, you know, I can imagine if someone hadn't heard the allegations, they would hear his apology here and they would think, oh, it must have just been some mild thing that happened at work. It was a mild power nuance thing. You know, he'll learn. And so then he can get his career back on track.
For everything that I've done. So that being said, I want to make a few things clear. I've always taken no for an answer. As far as consent, I've never overstepped that line. But, you know, I think I want to have a more nuanced and important conversation about power dynamics, pressure, and coercion. Because, you know, like I said, I think for a long time, I was behaving in a way that I actually thought was normal. I thought that, you know, going home from the bar alone made you a loser.
It's so interesting. I don't know what's happening, obviously, but if the allegations are true, it is interesting the way that he's framing this. Now, either he's telling the truth and everyone else is lying, which I guess is a long shot, but possible. I suppose that's possible. But if the victims are being truthful, then he either sees it this way, this is how he perceives it, which does happen. People will go into, they will predate on others and they will go into denial about it. They'll say, no, that never happened. And they'll just section, you know, we have a very robust, competent skill of denial. When we don't want to think about something, we will not think about it. And it's a chance that that's what we're witnessing here. There's another chance that he absolutely knows what he has done, but he is calculating a response so that he can get his career back on track. He just blew up. He just got his HBO situation going. He's been, I Googled him, and he's been interviewed on CNN and all these other places. He's about to become gigantic. And in, right at that time, suddenly his career is seemingly potentially coming to an end. Like, end. Like, he would have to go back to school to figure out another career or something, or get a job at a restaurant or in retail or something. Like, that's where he's at. Maybe he could retire on whatever he's saved up. But anyway, you could imagine that he would think pretty long and hard about how he should respond. And he might be savvy enough to know that if he just denies everything, then he'll just be canceled because people will tend to believe the victims. But if he massages it in a certain way and he spins it, he'll say, I agree and I feel sorry for what I did, and I will not throw the victims under the bus, but I frame it this way. If I can frame it in a way that shows that I am a young man who feels insecure and I didn't know what else to do, no one taught me, and now I've learned my lesson, then maybe I can get my career back. It's really interesting the way he says this. I could see someone, if they hadn't heard the allegations or they were looking for an excuse to, and maybe that's the point, like Andrew Callahan might calculate that his fans are looking for any excuse to stay on board. And if he can give them an excuse, then he will do that. And so this could be that. It's him not disagreeing with the allegations, but it's him reframing it in this whole other storyline.
But, you know, I think I want to have a more nuanced and important conversation about power dynamics, pressure, and coercion. Because, you know, like I said, I think for a long time, I was behaving in a way that I actually thought was normal. I thought that, you know, going home from the bar alone made you a loser. I thought that persistence was a form of flattery.
So all this could be true. All of this will play into coercive victimization of individuals, particularly women, because men are taught that they're a loser if they don't go home with someone, or they don't bag the babe, if you will, and that they should never take no for an answer. But the allegations are far, far beyond the threshold of what I would call incompetent, young, immature boys not knowing how to behave in a public space with women. Like, that's not what I'm what we're hearing from the victims. What we're hearing from the victim is repeated, fairly sophisticated systems of pressuring people, stalking people, forcing themselves on people after they've repeatedly, in a sober environment, said, no, I don't want to know, especially that last account that we heard. I mean, for him to frame it as the way he's framing it is, yikes.
I thought that, you know, if at first somebody was reluctant, you know, they're playing hard to get, just try harder. And if you think someone's feeling you, you know, make a physical advance and see if they go with it. And I think that, especially, I realized when so many young people, especially young men, rushed to defend me when this stuff first started coming out, that this type of sex pest behavior is normalized. And a lot of people think this stuff is normal when I don't think that it is. And I think that I want to be fully responsible for not having a fluid understanding of consent and what enthusiastic two-way consent looks like.
Okay. It's I don't know if I'm just being convinced by his mastery of the internet, but that sounds better. That sounds more encouraging. Earlier, he said, I want to be clear, I've always taken no as a no. That is not what the victims are saying. So everything hinges on that. If he can't admit that he has a problem with accepting no, or this is total speculation, if he can't admit that he actually gets pleasure from putting people in situations where they will say no, and then he continues to pressure and scare them, then we're not in a zone of any kind of accountability yet, if we believe the victims.
That being said, a lot of the things that have been said online about me are not true. A lot of things are missing really important contextual information that I think would change people's interpretation of a lot of these situations, but I'm not.
Yeah, I'm sure that if we had the full story, that it would be a little different. But I have a hard time, and I've been down this road many times with many people in my office, both perpetrators and victims. And of course, as a member of our society, I've certainly seen a lot of different public accounts come out. And I would have a hard time believing that if we were there somehow witnessing what was happening, that there would be other details that would exonerate him. You know, maybe there's a couple details, like he might say, well, that woman at the time, she actually kissed me at first, and she left that out completely. Might there be something like that? Sure. But that doesn't negate everything that happened after that point, right? Now, I'm not saying that's what happened, but he's saying that there are other details that were left out. Sure. But it's hard to imagine that there would be any detail that would mitigate what he did.
I'm not here to invalidate anybody's lived experience. If you feel pressured, you know, that's just what it is. I hope that young people and young men in particular can use my mistakes to learn and move through life with a better understanding of consent. As far as what I have planned, I'm not really sure what comes next.
Yeah, it's interesting because he's saying a lot of good things, but it lacks substance. It lacks a foundation. It lacks a true acknowledgement of what he has done. It's just fascinating. I don't think I've ever heard such a... So if the allegations are true, I don't think I've ever heard such a savvy response, because I could absolutely see people being convinced, particularly his fan base. If you're not a fan of his, you don't care. You're just someone like, oh, I never liked him, or I didn't know him. He's been outed. Fine. Cancel. But if you're a fan, you're wanting some excuse to continue to be a fan, because not only do you want to consume his content, which has a social value from what I understand. I don't know, but the little bit I have seen of his content, there is social value to it. He does out people that should be outed. He does educate the public in what our society, different cultural movements within our society that are concerning, and his politics seem to be on the right side of history. I don't quote me on that, obviously. I've only seen a few of his videos, but you could imagine being a fan of that and really depending on him to go out there and out those individuals in the style that he does. And you want to continue to enjoy that. You want to continue to support that movement that he is a part of. You could also imagine, and this is a cognitive bias that we have, that once we lock in on a reality, once we believe something to be true, when we hear opposing data, our first reaction is almost always to reject that. So if you're a fan of Andrew Callahan, not only do you believe something to be true and will initially reject information to the contrary, but again, you might also really need him to be doing what he's doing, because he is, for some people, fighting the good fight out there. So it's potentially extremely savvy what he's doing in this video, because if you were looking for an excuse to like him, he's serving it up on a platter.
I mean, obviously, you know, reporting is my one true love, and I'm 25 years old and I have my whole life ahead of me. But I really think that I need to do some serious work on myself and figure myself out. So
maybe he will. I can't know. I don't hear evidence of that. And it would make sense that prior to doing that work, he might not have the awarenesses that he will later. So if he legit engages in that, in therapy, would be with someone who is a specialist in this area, by the way, then absolutely. I've treated predators. I've had them develop those awarenesses and change their behavior. So it could happen. It takes a long time, and it's not without its bumps in the road, but it is possible. Sometimes people will say this when they actually don't intend on changing, or they even go to treatment and they will laugh on the inside at the therapist the whole time while tricking the therapist. Psychopaths will do that at times, not always. So who knows? But I don't know. Maybe he legit will change. But I would say that if I heard this, say I received a police report along the lines of the allegations against Andrew Callahan is coming to me voluntarily or court mandated to be in therapy with me, and I heard this and it was legit, I would actually be encouraged. I would wonder if I'm being played, if I'm being tricked and manipulated, of course, but I would be encouraged by what I'm hearing. I wouldn't say we're done. I would say this is a great start. We have a lot of road to cover in the next number of years, because what we want to get to eventually is for the individual to, we would want the individual to express authentic remorse about what they have done to other people. Now, some people lack the capacity for that, so that's a whole other topic, and there's a whole other treatment road to go down with those individuals. Essentially, you have to convince the individual that it's within their best interest not to harm other people. And I have worked with psychopaths to good effect, and I'm not the only one, obviously. There are many people in my field who have. So it's hard, and it requires the individual to want to change, but it can be done. Because if you have psychopathic personality disorder, if you have a lack of empathy that is inherent to your personality, that is very unlikely to change. So you have to work around it. You have to develop ways of telling yourself, look, I know I don't care about other people's feelings, but it doesn't serve my interest to actually harm that individual, because eventually it'll come back around and I'll be harmed because they will out me or they'll call the police or something. So it's within my best interest actually not to harm them. Even though I don't care about harming them, I do care about me. And so I have to coach myself and constantly remind myself. It's sort of like an addiction in a sense. It's not an addiction, but it is along those lines of where you're reminding yourself of these consequences that may or may not even happen further down the road, and modifying your behavior in the present. So there's that. And again, I'm not diagnosing him. I obviously have no idea. But if he legit gets help, then maybe he will get better. He might still, if the allegations are true, he might still be worthy of being canceled even if he does change, right? This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a new year, so of course it's time for New Year's resolutions. But often, those are just manifestations of internalized harmful voices, voices that tell us we're not good enough. So instead of making a resolution to change something, let's recognize that we are already good enough. Now, most people think of therapy as a place for us to work on our problems. But there are several schools of thought within the field of psychotherapy that adamantly reject that paradigm, like narrative therapy and solution-focused. Instead, these clinicians help us focus on what we're already doing well. And by helping us do that, data shows that we often will gravitate towards more beneficial patterns. Well, one place you can find such therapists is on BetterHelp. If you're thinking of starting therapy, it's definitely worth giving a try. So, celebrate the progress you've already made. Visit BetterHelp.com/Kirk today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Kirk.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I really think that I need to do some serious work on myself and figure myself out. So I'm going to start therapy sessions pretty much immediately. Also, not to blame alcohol, but I truly believe that alcohol was a contributing factor to my poor decision making.
Yeah, and that's been demonstrated for people who perpetrate these kinds of crimes. Alcohol often will be a factor. It's not the cause, because there are plenty of people who are drinking frequently and they never even come close to what he is doing. So it is a factor in these individuals doing these sort of things. So I want to talk about something that's been rattling around in my head. I don't know about him, but I'll tell you a fictional story about someone else that I'm making up right now. This individual was born with a difference in their brain, in that their amygdala or their fear response was not as robust. It was far below average, meaning that the infant, the young child, does not have as much fear as other people do. So on one hand, you might think, oh, that's kind of a superpower. You don't get afraid very often. As someone myself who suffers from anxiety at times, that would be great. If I could just turn down my fear response, it'd be nice. You know, when I'm laying there in the dark at night, trying to fall asleep and my mind starts racing. It'd be nice not to have fears about things. So it can sound like a superpower, but it actually can. And the model of psychopathy, the model of developing antisocial personality, one of the models is that some of these individuals are born this way. They don't have the same capacity of experiencing fear as other people do. And one of the effects that can result from that is that when you are being parented and when you're living in the world, one of the things that happens is that you will do things impulsively. You'll throw a rock or you will get close to traffic and your caregivers or other people will freak out, right? There are different ways that caregivers will react, right? Small reactions, like if you're not picking up your toys, your parent might be like, hey, I really need you to pick up your toys. But if you're walking out into the street or you have a big rock and you're about to hit your sibling over the head, caregivers, good caregivers anyway, will react much bigger. They won't just be like, hey, don't hit your sibling over the head with a rock. No, parents will flip. They'll be, they'll scream. No. And when we do that as caregivers, that will have a lot of different effects. It alerts the child that has the rock. But it also produces a fair amount of fear in the child. Now, we don't want to make children feel afraid because that can be abusive, obviously. But a little bit of fear, actually, according to this model, will help children to learn where the line is. So they pick up a rock and they impulsively, they're just curious. There's a, I want to bonk this other kid over the head with this rock. The kid's, 2.5 or something. And somebody, oh no! And a kid with a normal sense of fear will go, oh! And, a shock goes through them. It's like, oh, what's happening? And what that does is it alerts the whole body and mind to what I was just about to do is a scary thing. And we're encoded, we evolved to avoid things that we're afraid of. So the child will learn, you could almost say that they learn morality to some extent as a result of this fear response. They do things that cause people to react in big ways. Now, the caregiver doesn't have to hit the child, but if you've ever had a kid and you just raise your voice, if you react with fear yourself to a child, like if the kid's about to walk out into the street and you have you get a scary feel, oh my God, the kid will stop and stare at you because they're afraid too. They're very enmeshed with our emotions. And so you exhibit fear and the kids, what's happening? And they don't even know why you're afraid because they don't understand traffic. They don't understand cars, but they do know that you are afraid and thus they are afraid and thus they need to freeze and stop whatever they're doing. Okay, so I hope I'm exhibiting and role-playing that well enough. And so it's pretty complex, obviously. So say someone is born with a pretty low response to fear and you have situations where they have an impulse to pick up a rock and hit someone over the head. And they pick up a rock and they're about to hit someone over the head and the parents freak out normally, appropriately. And the kid, because they don't feel fear, they just, or they put the rock down and they don't really encode that the behavior should be avoided because they don't have that fear response and thus don't have a reason to avoid that behavior in the future. And so over time, they might continue to have impulses of various different sorts, but some of which actually are harmful to other human beings. Another example is you could take that rock and hit another kid over the head and no one sees it, but the kid sees it that you hit over the head. The kid starts to cry and scream, that will also often induce a fear response in the perpetrator. And that fear response often will contribute to what we might consider our impulse control, our behavioral control, our maturity, and our morality, if you will, that we shouldn't harm others. Now, there's also a lot of research regarding that humans are born with an innate altruistic impulse towards other people. So it's fear isn't the only factor as we develop morality and altruism and the lack of predation on other human beings. But if you lack fear, then you might not react when other people react against your behavior against other people. And thus you might not be given a chance to learn how to control your behavior. And you might even feel kind of powerful, like you can get away with things. Because for me, for example, when I was a kid, what shaped my behavior was just the possibility that my parents would be disappointed in me. My parents never hit me. They weren't abusive. They didn't yell at me. But I really just didn't want them to be disappointed in me. Same with other authority figures, you know, teachers, this sort of thing. I was afraid of just them feeling bad about me, thinking bad about me. And so that shaped my behavior. If I had no fear, if I wasn't afraid of that, then I might feel free to do whatever I want. And that could involve harming other people, or it could just involve behaving outside of the box, right? You might be willing to get on stage because you don't care about people thinking bad about you. You might feel also completely comfortable walking up to strangers on the street and interviewing them about things that you are trying to humiliate them about. You might feel completely comfortable just walking up to someone on the street saying, hey, tell me about the NRA, or tell me about your points of view, or tell me about how you're pro-gun, while they're holding a gun. And you don't care about the consequences, even though these individuals might try to get you later, right? But you don't have fear. It can go a lot of different ways, right? These individuals can both be exploitative of other people, and these people might be able to do things that other people might be envious of. A lot of people might be envious of Andrew Callahan for his ability just to walk up to people on the street. I couldn't do that. You could. I would be way too nervous. I don't want them to yell at me. I just can't. Well, maybe in my older age I might be able to, but not when I was younger. So for this fictional individual, it's possible that the same difference in your personality might lead to you having a very successful career as a YouTuber who walks up to people on the street and interviews them. That same personality trait also results in you not having empathy for other people. Maybe even you get a kick out of bothering other people and harming other people, making other people suffer. So I'm just going to throw that out there.
And I think that alcohol in general has had a devastating impact on my life. So I think I'm going to make the decision to join the 12-step program for Alcoholics Anonymous. And during this journey into sobriety, I want to take a serious step back from public life and, like I said, figure myself out.
Okay, that's good. Proof's in the pudding. And this could be the beginning of a journey for him. But I don't know. If I heard him say, you know what, I've been thinking about this for a long time. The allegations just hit a crescendo recently. The allegations have been coming out a long time, even before I was known on the internet. And I've always known there was something wrong with me. Or if he said something like that, that would lend itself more toward credibility or believability or a positive prognosis. But he's acting like these allegations are bewildering to him. He's just like, I think I have a lot to learn. You have a lot. I think everyone understands what you did was a crime. It's not just misconduct. What he did were crimes.
And I hope that this reaches the ears of anyone who's felt affected by me. I'd love to reach out to you, or you can reach out to me, even just for me to say I'm sorry and I really apologize and I appreciate you all. I also want to apologize to my closest collaborators, you know, my friends, my family, and people who will have to wear this stain on their career forever. You guys don't deserve this, and I love you guys. That being said, if you never want to watch Channel 5 again, I understand. I hope you remember the missions of radical empathy and media literacy that we have tried to put into the world through our...
So for some people, they'll have a hard time reconciling two seemingly opposing ideas, that someone could do good in the world and actually want to do good in the world while also behind the scenes being a predator. Bill Cosby is a prime example of this. Bill Cosby legitimately and objectively did a lot of good in society. I could list all the things, but you could just look them up. It's clear that he went completely out of his way and sacrificed potentially some of his career or put it at risk by pushing back against the privileged white world. So Bill Cosby did a lot of good and a lot of other things in addition to that. And according to the allegations, which sound extremely credible, he was behind the scenes drugging people to sleep and assaulting them sexually while they were incapacitated and then intimidating them afterwards to keep them silent. It is monstrous what he did. I mean, it's like, if you made a movie about someone like that, I'd be like, come on, that's ridiculous. No one is that much of a monster. How can both of those things exist, where he was both a good for society and a monster at the same time? Well, the easiest answer that people will land on is, well, obviously he was just doing all those good things because he was trying to make up for the bad things, or he's trying to, it was a smoke screen so that he could get away with the bad things. And that could be true. But it's also possible and really hard for people to wrap their mind around that there could be multiple aspects to someone's personality. They can be both a monster and they can have legit, authentic motivations and goals in life to help other people. There's no way to objectively know if it's authentic or not, or if it's just a ruse to try to trick everyone, but we don't know. So for Andrew Callahan, he might have been one of those people who legit has motivation and a track record of doing good in the world, according to some people, and behind the scenes also be a monster, allegedly. Those things can exist. And you know, it's just one of those things about psychology and personality that we just have to live with. There's no objective science to this. We can't know for sure why people do what they do. It's confusing and uncomfortable for us to admit that, to have a question mark. We want to put a label down. Oh, he's a psychopath and everything he did must have been psychopathic. Everything he did must have been some grand Machiavellian scheme. That is a comfortable conclusion that I can come to. Yeah, could be true, but it's also possible that it is extremely complex. Now, do the good deeds justify or outweigh or let him off the hook for the bad deeds? In my book, no. If the allegations are true, I don't care what he's done in the world. He is a criminal who should be behind bars, honestly, or should be prosecuted to the full extent of the law. And I think he might, I could imagine that's probably where he's headed. I mean, the allegations are no joke. These are criminal acts that he has allegedly committed. So he could be looking at prison time. He could be looking at 10, 20 years of prison time. I don't know, but I don't know. Anyway, so I think he's got a little bit more to say here.
Through our coverage. All right, that's all I want to say.
All right, well, that does it for that episode of Psychology in Seattle. Let me know what you think in the comments or email me by clicking the link below and going to the website, and you can email me from there. That's the if you really want to contact me, that's the surest way. I don't always see every comment, just so you know that. And everyone out there, please take care of yourself, take care of others, take a deep breath. This is pretty heavy stuff. You might be triggered even if you don't consciously know you're triggered, so make sure you check in with yourself because you deserve it. You really, really do.